Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Melt Hammer podcast. It is episode 167. I am Mel from Melt Hammer. Thanks, as always, for joining us. This week's episode is a review roundup featuring myself, Jonathan Seltzer, reviews editor of Melt Hammer, and Melt Hammer writer, Mr. Stephen Hill, all reviewing the latest metal releases that you need to know about. But before we get stuck into that, don't forget that the latest issue of Metal Hammer magazine is out right now as well. We are celebrating 10 years of baby metal, if you can believe that. That issue is out across the UK in shops, and you can also get it sent directly to your door from tinyurl.com/gethammer. That's tinyurl.com/gethammer. We had some baby metal bundles that went online this week, and they sold out very fast indeed. So sorry if you didn't get your hands on those. The bundles we put up don't tend to mess around. They go very, very quickly. And on that note, if you're a big Gojira fan, we are releasing some special Gojira bundles this week featuring some signed goodies. So keep an eye on the Metal Hammer website and our social media channels for more news of those. I don't think those will stick around very long either, so do not mess about. You're going to want to get off those if you're a big Gojira fan. We want to give a big shout out to our sponsors as well. The brilliant Killstar sponsor the Metal Hammer podcast. They are one of the world's leading alternative fashion brands. They have a fantastic range of clothing, shoes, accessories and lifestyle items for all genders. So whether you consider yourself a metalhead, a goth, a punk, or you simply just love alternative fashion and accessories, it's the site for you. And Metal Hammer podcast listeners get an exclusive discount off of Killstar items. All you have to do to access it is sign up to the Killstar newsletter. You'll get a 10% discount off your next purchase, and you'll be entered into a draw to win a £100 Killstar gift card. How cool is that? So to claim your discount and be entered into the draw, all you have to do is visit killstar.com/pages/metalpod. That's killstar.com/pages/metalpod. Enter your details there and you'll be sent a code for the discount that will expire after 30 days. Killstar had t-shirts, dresses, shoes, pin badges, beanies, sunglasses, pretty much anything you can think of. It's all there. You can kick yourself out for summer. So head over to killstar.com/pages/metalpod now. And if you're entering from the US or Europe, you can also access the page by adding US dot or EU dot at the start of that address. And if you win, the prize draw will be for $100 gift cards or €100 gift cards, depending on where you're coming in from. And you can sign up to all that until July 2nd. So get on it. Killstar have some good stuff. You're going to want to not miss out on that. So without further ado, I'm going to hand over to myself, Stephen and Jonathan, talking about some of the biggest and most interesting metal releases coming at you imminently. Some of them are already out. One of them is quite a big one that's coming out next week. We talk Fear Factory, Atreyu. We talk Perturbator, Black Moon Mother, Noctul, a really cool mix of artists in there. It's all good stuff, so we hope you enjoy it. You might hear a little bit of pop and crackle on my mic. I had a couple of feed issues as we were recording, but the rest of it should go pretty swimmingly. So we hope you enjoy. This is me, Steve, and Jonathan. Now then, boys, we've got some albums to review. It's been a few weeks since we've done a review roundup, so we thought we'd do one here. One of the albums is coming out next week. The rest are ones that are out there right now. You can go and listen to immediately after finishing this podcast. Wide old range of albums we're going to get stuck into today. And I think the first one we should get stuck into is probably, in many ways, the most interesting from a context standpoint. The new Fear Factory album, Aggression Continuum, is out June 18th on Nuclear Blast. That's next Friday. This is an album that, for all intents and purposes, looked like it was going to be an absolute clusterfuck, because the situation around Fear Factory has been a total clusterfuck. The band have kind of fallen apart again, not for the first time. But it is for the first time that vocalist Burton C. Bell is not going to be in the band anymore. And all this news kind of came ahead of the release. And for a while, we didn't even know if Burton was going to be on the album, if they had another singer in by then, because Dino was doing press saying they were bringing another singer in at some point. All this stuff. So it's a bit of a mess. But not only is Burton on this Fear Factory album, despite the fact he's technically not in the band anymore, but it's actually really good. What you said about this Fear Factory album, Steve, and all the kind of bullshit around it, I guess.
Well, it is bullshit around it, isn't it? And it's a real shame, because I think Fear Factory have been sort of surrounded by bullshit for quite a long time now, since pretty much, I mean, after Digimortal, Burton left. I mean, that's going back, you know, 20 plus years now, but Burton left, and then he came back, and then they just split up, and then they came back with a, you know, the first time around with no Dino, and then they just split up again, and then they came back with the classic lineup, which was just Dino and Burton. And it just feels like the last 20 years, Fear Factory have been quite an exhausting band to be a fan of, you know, because there's so much outside stuff going on. You know, there's so much stuff that you're like soap opera-y shit that you have to sort of worry about. And it's a shame because particularly when they sort of properly came back in the mid-noughties, they've actually been making really, really good music in, I would say, the last like 10 to 12 years. They've actually made really, really good Fear Factory albums in that time when they had, was it Byron Stroud and Gene Hoglan were the kind of rhythm section for that period of Mechanize, which I think is a great
Mechanize
album.
Is honestly, I don't know what would make it on some overall Fear Factory podium after Demanufacturing's Obsolete, but Mechanize would definitely be in the conversation. It's fucking great, that record.
Yeah. And it's you know, it's a really, really strong record. And I think they had a little period. That's probably the most sort of like safe and secure as a band that they felt for quite a long time. And now this has happened. And I think the last one, was it called Genexus? Or Nexus or something, or Genesis, that came out probably like 5-6 years ago. That wasn't great. But this album's come out and I was a bit like, oh God, all the drama surrounding it has kind of like suffocated my thoughts of how much I would actually enjoy this record. And then you stick it on, not really expecting anything, and it's fucking great. Like, it's really good. You know, it's they're not obviously not inventing the wheel in any way whatsoever. It sounds like classic Fear Factory. And I mean, if you're a long time fan of them as a band, which I am, they just do that thing better than anyone else. They've got a really obvious, you know, they've obviously got a very unique and specific sound to them. And I think it'd be asking quite a lot for them to really change too much in the grand spectrum of music at this point in their career. But they kind of get away with it because they sound so obviously like Fear Factory. And it's great to hear a band sound, I'd say, almost as good as they sounded back in their heyday, all this time down the line. But it's just a shame that it's going to get overshadowed by what is a lot of kind of he said, she said silliness, you know?
Yeah, so it's a weird context to this album. And to be honest, like, I mean, you know, I'm kind of similar to Steve. They're historically one of my favourite bands. Demanufacturing is one of my favourite metal albums. I've liked a lot of their post 2000 output, but when I heard this album was coming, it was just, I was quite surprised it had been 5 or so years since the last record, to be honest, because I just kind of felt like it's another Fear Factory album, but the bullshit around the band has been amplified this time, and I wasn't that interested. I was just a bit like, yeah, okay, fine. Part of that was because I was under the impression Burton wasn't going to be on it, and I was just like, well, I'm interested to see what a new person sounds like, but it just seems odd to not have Burton on a Fear Factory album. But then, yeah, listening to it, there's loads of great fucking stuff on here. And you're right, Steve, this is Fear Factory. They do what they do and they do it better than anyone. But there's something about the kind of balance of production and the way some of the album is produced and put together that gives it quite a unique feel a lot of the times. I mean, on that first song, Recode, when those kind of sweeping symphonic keys come in, like, I know this is a really obvious reference point, but like, some of that shit sounds like it could be on a Nightwish album, and I'm honestly not exaggerating. It's really like grandiose and symphonic, and I mean, Fear Factory have always had keys and that style to their music, but it's really kind of like big dramatic sweeping melodies over this song, and it just makes it feel a bit different. It makes it feel a bit more kind of cinematic and almost like soundtracky in a sense, and I thought that was really
well. It's like brass, isn't it? I mean, it's, yeah, sort of, I guess, you know, on The Satanist, Behemoth brought in that thing. And then I think a lot of bands post that have you, like, I think the Soulfly album Archangel that came about a year or so after, they used a lot of that kind of arcane sounding brass. But I've never really heard it used, I mean, certainly not by Fear Factory, and certainly not in the way kind of marrying that with this very sort of tech heavy robo metal that Fear Factory do, this kind of industrial metal. That is quite a new, yeah, you're right, that's quite a new sound, and it sounds really good. So there's definitely little touches of things where you can see they've tried to do different bits and bobs, but really, you know, they are so good at writing them songs about the machines. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're so good at that.
Yeah, I mean, even the song titles are just so Fear Factory, like Manufactured Hope, as I said, Recode, like even like Collapse. I was a bit like, Fear Factory really never had a song called Collapse before. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just seems like a song they should have written before. And that
fuel injected suicide machine.
Yeah, I mean, like that's probably like pulling names out of a Fear Factory hat, isn't it? They're so good. Yeah. Go on, Jonathan.
No, I mean, as much as I like this album, I kind of feel that, like, and it is a, you know, a good Fear Factory album in a lot of ways, but I also kind of feel that they've painted themselves into a corner a little bit. Like, this is as good as you're going to get. So I actually think that having a new singer is an opportunity to kind of maybe reassess what they can do and maybe give them a new kind of breath of life. Because with this one, I mean, it's good that they've managed to kind of get back to what they do, but there's nothing really mind blowing on it. It's more of a sense of relief. Plus, I think that you know, a lot of the bits with the clean vocals, they go on a bit too long, and the melodies are a bit too tra la 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 la.
I know exactly what you mean by that. I thought the same thing. There's some bits where he really kind of goes la 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 la, and it kind of goes up down up down up down, and it lasts a really long time.
And it just loses the momentum of it. And it kind of makes it also feel, it's like, because obviously, like in Fear Factory, there's a humongous Godflesh influence at the beginning, and sometimes I just feel like this is still sort of Godflesh light, like the way they use some of the grooves, but not with the kind of the sense of claustrophobia that Godflesh had it, the way that kind of breaks into the clean vocals. But now also here you can hear lots of Meshuggah, you know, Disruptor's got this kind of very Meshuggah-esque groove, Purity's got that groove is very like bleed. So I think it's good. I think it's not brilliant. I just think that it's kind of like it's good, but it's almost like a dead end. I also think it's quite ironic that the last line on the album, where he repeats, you know, fear is a mind killer, and the last lyrics are, when the fear is gone, only I remain, which is quite ironic considering.
I know, I thought that was quite interesting, because I presume that Dino's the one who's kind of structured the album and all that kind of stuff, because obviously Burton's gone now. I mean, it must be very strange for Burton singing on an album from a band he's left and is not feeling particularly happy about at the moment. But there's a lot of that kind of stuff on here. I mean, the first lyric on the first track, Recode, is imagine your life taken from you. And then, yeah, right at the end, that with those lyrics you were just talking about, Jonathan, I mean, that track's called End of Line. So it's just kind of like there's a lot of very obvious narrative stuff going on here that links into Fear Factory. And it's impossible not to consider those, because it is, as I said, such a bizarre and unique circumstance in which we greet this Fear Factory album. But I do think it's a really strong record. You know, I do think there's enough little interesting flourishes on there to make me want to come back for more, as opposed to maybe the last couple of Fear Factory albums. I love the track Collapse that I mentioned earlier. It's just this gut heavy grinding riff that sounds fucking awesome. I love the bounce on Manufactured Hope. It's almost got this kind of Cross Faith-esque ravey vibe to the intro, like the keys that run under it. So yeah, there's a lot going on, and I think it's a strong album, and I think it's, you know, if this is the last time we ever see Burn on a Fear Factory album, it's a solid bow out, I'd say. Is that fair, Steve?
I mean, for me it is, yeah. I mean, I understand the kind of Godflesh comparisons, obviously, from particularly on like Soul of a New Machine early on. But I think, again, I mean, people will kind of point to a band like Strapping Young Lad and go, wow, they do that better than Fear Factory. I think Fear Factory are a really nice middle ground between what was kind of nu metal and, I don't know, Static X or Spineshank or whatever, and that more extreme stuff. I think they've always sort of straddled that line really well, where they're not really a death metal band or a kind of extreme industrial band or whatever. They have got, you know, when you listen to, you mentioned Obsolete, obviously Digimortal was really, you know, properly quite clean for Fear Factory, covering Cars and stuff like that. I think they've always had one eye on, you know, writing bigger, dare I say it, poppier, well, not even poppier, but like more melodic, catchier stuff in their career. And I think, you know, for me, this record does that thing, but doesn't scrimp on what I think probably the best thing about Fear Factory is, which is Dino's guitar riffs. Like when that kind of, when that rhythmic machine starts moving, I think they're an absolutely brilliant band. And it is a really sort of beautifully unique sound. I know it's obviously borrowed from a lot of things that we've already mentioned, but yeah, I think just hearing that, that kind of Fear Factory machine moving in the way that it can in 2021 for me was very exciting. I think Jonathan's right. Like there's not, they're not going to do, I think new singer or not, I can't ever imagine Fear Factory sounding like anything other than what Fear Factory have always sort of sounded like.
I agree with Jonathan. It would be a, it's a lovely idea, but I can't see, it's just Dino's band now, isn't it? And I just can't see anyone overriding him in a meaningful way when it comes to influencing the direction of that band. I might be wrong, but.
Yeah. I just think like lyrically and maybe with some of the delivery as well, it's just on the right side of self-parody. But it's, but there's that lurking danger of, you know, lyrically, and it's just like us against the machine, you can't do this to me or whatever. And it's just, it's almost like a, you know, it's almost like a hardcore band. It's like, who are you to judge me, kind of feeling. But without any, without any, without like whoever's doing this thing to you being specified.
I think some, I think it feels like, I guess if you're a fan, like, you know, I was probably about 15 when I first got into Fear Factory, and it feels like a sort of nice warm comfort blanket to hear them sound exactly the same. I know some bands, you want them to evolve and to change, and, you know, we've spoken about someone like Deftones on this show before and how great it is that they've had this really kind of amazing evolution throughout their career. But sometimes bands just do the thing that scratches that particular itch, and I think this album scratches that itch very well, personally.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've got a huge long history with them. I remember, I've been following them since the beginning. I remember writing about them in Millennium Maker days, seeing them at the Underworld, and I've been following them and interviewing them for, you know, ever since like the late 90s. So I've got a lot of residual affection for them, but I'm still not going to give them a complete pass.
Fair enough.
That is totally your right.
And you know, I do have a lot of history with that band.
that is your right. That is your right. That's fine. The album is out next week, next Friday. It's called Aggression Continuum. Basically, if you like Fear Factory, old or new, you want some Fear Factory in your life, this is gonna tick the box with some industrial style. That was fucking cheesy. Next up, speaking of cheesy, they all saved it. We've got the new album from Atreyu, Baptized. This album snuck up on me a bit, to be honest. I kind of barely knew it was on the way, and then it was just out in the world already. It's out now on Spine Farm. It's quite a big album for Atreyu in a way, because it's the first record without Alex on vocals. He left last year. There's a little bit of heat going on in that situation, it seems, to use some wrestling parlance. We've got Brandon on cleans. He's replaced on drums by Carl Rosa, and Porter's doing screams as well as bass. So I think I've got that all right. Atreyu are an interesting band. I was never the most diehard Atreyu fan. I know Elle, it's a shame Elle's not here, because I know Elle was a big Atreyu fan back in the day, so she can probably give this a fairer shake than I. But they were unquestionably a huge force on the kind of metalcore scene, especially those bands coming out of Orange County in the mid-2000s. They kind of went away, they came back, they've had a solid slog of it since. They've been releasing album after album since then. I think this is their third album since they kind of made their comeback a few years ago. And this album, Baptized, I guess it just kind of continues their evolution into a super polished, super streamlined, well-produced US radio rock slash metal band. I mean, I didn't know exactly what to expect from them this time around, but the title track, which I think is the first song on the album, I played it for you a few times the first time I heard it, right? And I'm not necessarily saying this is an insult, because I don't actually have any beef with the band I'm about to compare it to. But it reminded me of a song by a band, and I couldn't work out who it was, and I had to go over and over and over again. And then it suddenly hit me that it sounds like Nickelback. Do you know what I mean? I can't tell if you're unimpressed with my comparison, Steve, or just unimpressed with the song I'm talking about. Oh, cheers.
Yeah, I would say in the context that's giving him too much credit.
Oh wow. Okay, we're going in. Well, I mean, for what it's worth, like, yeah, I genuinely thought it sounded like a Nickelback song with kind of a slightly not quite up there, Patrick Stump singing the chorus. Like, there's such a clear kind of approach to where to what Atreyu do now, as which, as I said, is basically becoming a mega polished US radio friendly metal band. I mean, this album is music. It's filled with music that you would hear on a modern day main product WWE pay-per-view. It's catchy, it's hooky, it's flooded with those little electronic flourishes and gimmicks that you get in so much mainstream metal now, and it's glossed with that soft-edged kind of post 2010 metal production that does really well in certain territories. I don't find this kind of metal particularly inspiring, especially now when there's just so much exciting, innovative shit going on in the scene when it comes to young bands. But I think this is a really well put together album, and I don't dislike it at all. I kind of think by Steve's face and Jonathan's as well, you might not be as kind as I.
Should I start with the good stuff? Or what I thought was good,
okay,
about
go
it?
On then.
So it's always nice to have your suspicions confirmed. And this album confirmed the suspicion that I've long held since about 2002, that Atreyu are fucking hacks. Absolute fucking hacks. I remember seeing them supporting Boy Sets Fire, and it probably was about 2001, 2002, and I didn't know who they were, but I remember thinking, being into like hardcore quite a lot, and thinking, who are these cheesy fucking Motley Crue wankers coming into this gig and stinking the entire place out? And I've always, always hated Atreyu and everything that they've sort of created, really. The commercialization of the kind of the gentrification of metalcore is, they are, you know, they are like, it's got their, the blood of that is all over their fingerprints are all over that particular crime, I think. And I just think they're just a really quite a reprehensible band in general.
So what do you like about the album?
All right. Oh, no, nothing about the album. I like the fact that this has told me that I was right about them, and that now that metalcore and that kind of thing, that kind of Orange County screamo thing isn't cool anymore, they've decided to try and sound like Shinedown. So which is kind of, for me, is gone. Ah, yes, of course. Of course, because you can't sell records doing what you were doing before. So of course you're going to pick the thing that will get you on radio, because all you care about is selling as many records as you can, and you're just fucking hacks. So yeah, I think this is a genuinely dreadful, dreadful record from a really quite a dreadful band, is what I would say.
Wow. I mean, I've got some nice things to say about this album, so I'm going to wait to live those until I let Jonathan add the shit filling to this.
Yeah,
sandwich.
I'm gonna break it down a little bit, actually. So I mean, for them and Atreyu, this is just another day in the office, isn't it? You know, it's like, the thing is, like, every song is so modular, like it was spliced together from bits, you know, from different models in your studio. Let's put this bit here, let's put this bit there. So they're not songs. So when you say they're hacks, and this is why I say, like, you know, Nickelback is given too much credit, because whatever you think about Nickelback, they write songs. These aren't songs. These are constructions. You know, there's just, every bit is in its right place. There's nothing organic about them. There's nothing felt about them. The lyrics are so lazy, like you know, Broken Again. It's almost like that lyric. It's almost like Chumbawamba for Generation Z.
First
like,
thing
you know,
I
fall down,
first
but I get back up
I didn't
again.
Think I'll be hearing today.
Yeah, but you know, it's all just like, I fall down, but I get back up again. I'm broken, but you don't sound broken. And at the worst, you know, at best, they sound like some bad motivation in structure. You know, there's no real sense of introspection, and everything just feels like really complacent. Like, they have a song called Catastrophe, and it's like, what is a catastrophe? You just say it's a catastrophe, or I'm fucked, or fucked up. So what are you fucked up about? You haven't actually said. It's just this easy playing on emotions. And you know, to get out my subbing head on this, on some of it, it's like, you know, Untouchable, and it goes, we're untouchable, don't step to me. Well, why would you bother if someone steps to you if you're untouchable? Because you can deal with it. You know, it's just like, what the hell? And it's like, And then what's it? Yeah, this other song like with notes ago. They all live in misery.
Specific gripe. I love it.
You know, they have this lyric that goes, "They all live in misery, but we don't." It's like, yes, you do. All your songs up to now have been about being miserable, and it's just like you just want, they have this kind of like, I'm down, but I'm strong, and it's just like they just want both the cakes to eat it without actually having any detail. And then it's that last song, was it like, sometimes I fall from the sky, and then he goes, I'm a warrior. Well, you're not, unless you're in a parachute and you've got fatigues while you're falling from the sky. I mean, you know, it's just like, but you just want your cake and eat it. You want all the, you know, you want all the pity, but then you want to go, I'm strong. But there's nothing introspective and honest, and there's nothing really strong about what you're doing. And it's just this by rote, you know, series of basic metalcore tropes without any sort of filling out any of the details whatsoever, with this really modular, this bit goes here, that bit goes there, songwriting.
That's yeah, I mean, to give it a little bit of, some, I mean, to compare it with an album, which, I mean, me and you have spoken about a little bit more, and it's not actually out yet, but the Times of Grace album, the Jesse Leach and Adam D album that's coming out quite soon, right? Now, that is not a musically particularly interesting record, really. That is a fairly bog standard, quite, like, you know, quite
straightforward.
Just, you know, they're just songs, straightforward rock songs, right? But I found that record, because of Jesse and because of the context of the stuff that you said, I found that record incredibly moved, like genuinely found that record incredibly moving, because of Jesse's performance, because of the relationship between Jesse and Adam that you hear on that record. It didn't need to necessarily be anything musically groundbreaking to bring that level of emotion out in me, but just being really sort of heartfelt and honest, and I found that album like really quite poignant and beautiful. Whereas this, they're kind of basically saying the same things, but it's stripped of anything approaching like real emotion or humanity in any way.
Yeah,
whatsoever.
Yeah, there's no inner life.
No, it's just again, they are fucking chancers. They were chancers in the early 2000s, and they're chancers now. Like, I just, they're a bad band.
I mean, I think that's really... I can't, to be honest.
There's no vulnerability there.
I can't really dispute anything you guys have said. And to be honest, I don't think I'd find myself going about for a trade, because even back in the day when I was so hot on Killswitch and especially Avenged Sevenfold, I never really cared about Atreyu as much as a lot of my peers and friends did. But I think, you know, they've unquestionably...
Because those two bands have their own identity, which Atreyu don't
maybe,
have.
Maybe, but Atreyu unquestionably had a massive impact on that scene, and they were probably one of the next ones... You're talking about them and Bleeding Through and 18 Visions, and those kind of bands are the next ones down in that whole category. And I think there's a reason why Killswitch and Avenged are comfortably bigger and better than all those other bands, but... I definitely don't have as much of a problem with this kind of thing. I just think it probably is a little... I don't want to say it's dated, because it is something that is still very hot in metal right now in many ways, but I just don't find it that inspiring. I mean, in terms of that kind of overwrought, earnest, bouncy metalcore that they're trying to do, I just think for me, Beartooth have perfected it to an extent, and to an emotionally raw and honest extent, that no one else can really step up to it. And there's actually quite a few songs on here, to be honest, where... Ironically, because I wouldn't be surprised if Caleb would list Atreyu as an influence, but there's quite a few songs on here where I just think, oh, Beartooth do this now, and they do it so much better than everyone else. You know, to add some balance to it, I know Elle loves this album. I know she was saying she thinks it's just a really fun, light, bouncy summer metal album, and she's really into it. Danny Levers gave it a very fair 6 out of 10, I think it was, maybe a 7? I think it was 6, 6 out of... Yeah, 6 out of 10 review, which you can read on the Metal Hammer website now. I think it's a nice balanced review. So for me, I mean, you probably know from just listening to us talk about this whether this album is worth your time or not. But, you know, I'm all right. It's fine. It's not something I'm going to be playing a lot, but it didn't have me seething necessarily. You know what I mean? Like, it's fine. I can live with this kind of metal now. It's okay.
Yeah, I just resent a band treating me like an easy mark.
I would never treat you like an easy mark, Jonathan, let alone an Orange County metalcore band. That is Atreyu Baptized. It is out now. you know, if you just want some fucking fun, bouncy metalcore, like, I do think you could do a lot worse, so go and check it out. Steve's Tourette's coming in there again.
But the surface quality of it is tacky, like, you know, in the tactile sense, tacky.
Jonathan's letting nothing slide when it comes to correct use of verbiage today.
So
to go to a totally different end of the spectrum, and something I think we're all probably going to have nicer things to say about, we're going to review the debut album from Black Moon Mother. It's called Illusions Under the Sun. It's out now on Petrichor. And this is a relatively new band from Nashville. They've had one EP. This is their debut full length. It's atmospheric, moody, melancholic blend of like kind of fuzzy psych rock, shoegaze, doom, dark pop, all swimming around the this kind of hypnotic croon of their singer, Brianna Neal, who's brilliant. I think this is a brilliant album. It's like there's shades of Sabbath in here, Chelsea Wolf. I think there's quite a lot of Typo Negative, especially on the production side as well. This has got to be a bit of you, hasn't it, Jonathan?
Oh my god, this song is what, this kind of music is wired into my DNA. like the minute I heard this, I was just like, you know me, I just love these kind of slow rituals around a campfire in space kind of music. And so yeah, it's just got that thing that a lot of these other, you know, it's got this, that strange mix of purpose and dislocation that I really love, that like, you know, that Chelsea Wolf has got, that people like Darko have got. And I love the way the songs, like, they feel like they've been woven together out of the ether in real time, but with, you know, and they're from Nashville, so they've got like, this whole rich musicality that slowly comes into being through the music. And also you can really hear them like slowly slowing off their influences as the music goes, like, you know, like Around the Thing, I think it's the second track, you can almost hear a bit of the Breeders in it, and then it in some of the bass lines, and then it just kind of goes off into its own ether. And, you know, High Winds, it's got I don't know if it's got hints of Aaliyah Starbridge, who was an amazing late singer, and it allows things to emerge organically, which is completely opposite of what Trey do. So it's got this absolute wonderful mix of earth and air, and High Winds. And you know, it starts off with this kind of very mournful, longing Aaliyah Starbridge feeling, but then it just hits this kind of, and it's, when I say hits, it just kind of segues into this kind of well of doom, but a certain resonance that only certain doom bands like Electric Wizard can touch, that, you know, that really sort of subterranean something or other that, like, say maybe PJ Harvey can touch, but other artists can't, you know, the real kind of genuine darkness, but it's also kind of coming into light. And it also reminds me of one of my favorite bands the last 2 years, which is called Dead Feathers, which is, again, this kind of very ritualistic, mantric way of making music, and who I think are the most underrated band of the last few years. And I think the year it came out, their debut album, also called Dead Feathers, probably the album I played the most that year. And so it just feels like a lot of influences being drawn out and then being transcended, if you like. And it's just a beautiful, immersive, like, deeply felt record. And I'm in love with it.
I mean, I cannot give it higher praise than that. I think it's a really, really lovely album. It's just very kind of soul stirring and, like I said, kind of melancholic, emotional. It's got a real pull to it that I think you really have to get. I mean, there's a lot of music out there right now that kind of has these kinds of shades to it, I think. Like, you hear an album like this and it's not like, oh, this is unlike anything I've heard before, but there's certain bands that just kind of nail it so well that they just really pull you under in a whole different way, and I think they really do that on this album.
Yeah, I think that's a lot to do with the pacing, and this what I like about certain slow movies is that they bring almost like your biorhythms down to a certain pace that you're not really used to, but then it makes you aware of so much other stuff on the emotional spectrum that was kind of invisible beforehand, because you're always in a rush. And then, you know, when you sort of, you reach this kind of like this kind of tempo that they do, this kind of very slow swirling tempo, you really start to, it really illuminates things that you don't, that you kind of knew were always there, but weren't stuff on the, you know, something on the periphery perhaps of consciousness. and they kind of and they really kind of bring that in into the whole dynamic, and it's a really magical experience.
I definitely agree. It's a fucking great album. Did you get much of a listen to this one, Steve? What did you think?
I've only listened to it once through, and I was quite impressed with it. But I feel like there's more of it to come. The more kind of listens that I get into it, I don't really feel like I feel how Jonathan feels about it at the moment, because I thought like there's tonally it's lovely, like it's a lusciously it's got a beautiful, again, all that stuff that you were mentioning before about Chelsea Wolfe and yeah, the Breeders is a really like interesting sort of point to bring up, that kind of it's kind of cold and fuzzy at the same time at parts, I thought, which is really cool. And it's got, you know, I listen to a lot of 80s post-punk stuff, and it's got a real feel of not, you know, a bit of that, the sort of feeling of isolated darkness that a lot of that music has as well. I thought it was cool, really cool. I would be more interested to come back in like a week or so and go, I've listened to it 5, 6, 7 times, rather than just like one time through before I give you much more of a hypothesis than that. But I thought it was one of those records where immediately it just sounds, if you like that sort of thing, it just sounds delicious. You know what I mean? Like some albums are like a meal, and that's like, well, every album you could say is like a meal, and the Atreyu album is like a bit of bread with margarine
on
it.
As soon as you said that thing about albums like a meal, I saw a glint in your eye, and like he's going to compare the Atreyu album to something.
But it's like an ice cream you've managed to like savor for over the course of like an entire hour.
Well, that's never going to work, mate.
Yeah,
it'll melt.
Especially
this heat.
Sit in a freezer.
It's too hard, isn't it? Yeah. You want it like that nice little softening vibe to it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But it's also I was going to say, it's also the nature of the record that it's going to give up its jewels over time. Like, you know, every time you go back to it, it's going to like reveal more.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of love the fact that it wasn't an instantaneous, the songs didn't, they weren't kind of instantaneous songs. I was more kind of struck by just the overall mood of it before I was struck by the actual songs themselves. I think that's always a really, really good sign of a good album, that you're really intrigued by it, or you just really like being in its presence before the actual songs really grab hold of you on the sort of fourth, fifth listen. So yeah, I'm keen to go back to this.
Yeah, it's a fine album. It is the name of the album is Illusions Under the Sun. And it's by Black Moon Mother. You can hear that right now on all your usual platforms, whichever one you choose. Yeah. Oh, go on.
Yeah, just doesn't say one thing. So it was actually self-released last
Year.
Yeah,
sorry, I was going to say that. I forgot to mention that. Yeah, it looked like it's technically been around the block before.
Yeah, but now it's got released on Petrichor properly. And I've been eyeing up the vinyl, because it's just one of those records I feel like I really need to own.
I bet it sounds bloody lovely. Got a couple more albums to run through here. This next one's interesting. We've got the debut album from Noctul, which is the black metal solo project of Serena Cherry from Svalbard. They put out an absolute blinder of an album last year, made it into, I think, the top five of our albums of the year. One of the most beloved kind of UK metal bands in the scene right now. Obviously, Serena is a huge extreme metal aficionado, and she's produced her own black metal solo project, and the project is called Noctul. The album is called Wretched Abyss. It's out now via the brilliant Church Road Records, and it's a concept album based around Skyrim. And for anyone that's not a big nerd like us, that Skyrim is one of the biggest fantasy gaming titles ever. Basically, it's a huge, expansive RPG game in the fantasy realm, and this is a black metal project centered around that. What were we saying about this album, Steve? As someone, I mean, I know you like plenty of black metal yourself, but as someone who also likes a lot of Svalbard stuff, did you know what to expect from this album? What do you kind of make of it?
Well, I don't know anything about Skyrim. I think it's probably worth me saying that straight off the bat. I don't know shit about Skyrim. So does it conjure the kind of feel and aesthetic of Skyrim? I am not the person.
I mean, it's long, windswept, expansive mountains and Nordic stuff and fantasy epic icy battles. So it's kind of in black metal's wheelhouse. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, from what I know about it, you know, it makes perfect sense. I was just wondering that how much of that Skyrim backstory you would have to know to really properly get it as much, because I obviously don't. I think this is quite good. I mean, it should. I think it's a solo black metal side project, and I think it should probably be judged as such, because, you know, based on a computer game. So I think it's not. I think it would be hard to make something that was sort of genuinely essential from that, and so I think this has got moments on it that are quite good. I like it when it goes a bit more, like, you know, funnily enough, when it goes a bit more sort of classic heavy metal. I think there's a few times where you get a bit of a sort of Iron Maiden rumble, gallopy bass part, some really cool, like, icy leads over.
You'll be unsurprised to know that those are some of my favorite bits as well. I love it when, I mean, that's one of the things that black metal does really well. It kind of sews in those kind of classic melodic heavy metal influences quite a lot, and I love the way this album does that, definitely.
Yeah, that's probably my favourite bit about it. There's a couple of, like, real blasty bits in it that I like as well. Overall, though, I don't really feel like it's, you know, it's okay. I don't think it's particularly dynamic, and I'm not really a big enough fan of just the general sound of black metal straight to be thinking that I will go back to this, to be perfectly honest.
I think that's probably fair enough. As someone who is more of an expert, knee deep in the world of black metal, Jonathan, what do you make of this album?
Well, I quite liked it. It's better than I thought. It's a lot better than I thought it was going to be. Not because of anything to do with Serena, who's obviously a great artist. Just, again, just on paper, black metal record about Skyrim. Obviously, it's, you know, and I don't know Skyrim either. I've never played it. I've still only ever beaten two big daddies in BioShock, and that's as far as that's how far behind I am. But I feel like it's kind of in between zone between black metal and post black metal. It has elements of both, and I wouldn't listen to it in the way that I would listen to, like, a straightforward black metal record, because it doesn't have that kind of dark transcendent feeling to it, and it's not kind of aggressive. So that's, you know, it's kind of much more romantic sweet, which is why it's got that kind of post black metal sound to it, as well as a black metal sound. But I think that if you want to create a world without it being anything to do with any kind of sense of opposition, I think it does it quite well. It's got kind of lots of peaks and valleys. It's definitely got its own sound. I like the kind of the element of reverb on a voice. I think it gives it a real lot of atmosphere. My only issue is that by about three quarters, two thirds of the way through, it starts to feel a little bit samey. But a lot of post black metal bands, I kind of think, well, you've totally misunderstood. You've basically jettisoned all the things that black metal is supposed to be about, and you're just running with whatever's left, and you don't really have enough skin in the game to be really doing this. And I don't put that same criteria on this, because it doesn't fit. She obviously loves, you know, obviously loves her black metal. It's not trying to do the things that a lot of black metal does, but it feels like a very honest journey into whatever internal landscape she's trying to conjure. And I don't feel you need to know, you know, about Skyrim for this. You can imagine, you know, if it's not evocative in its own right, then it's going to fail as an album, and it is enough.
Yeah, no, I think that's really fair. I do really like this record. I think, as someone who has a relatively surface level connection with black metal, this ticks a lot of the boxes that normally draw me into the bands in that side of the scene, which is normally a, you know, good use of melody running under it, like Steve mentioned, some kind of like heavy metal histrionics at the center of it. I agree. I think her voice sounds really cool the way it's produced on here. It really works for me. So yeah, I like this album, and I think whether you're a fan of Svalbard or just someone looking for some really solid new black metal to listen to, I think you could do a lot worse than listen to this Nocturne album.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think it doesn't have that frisson
sure.
that really good Black Mirror has. But I don't think that's what it's going for, so I wouldn't hold that against it.
I think that's really fair. It is out now, as I said, on the awesome Church Road Records. Obviously, you can stream it and all that wherever you like as well. Finally, Steve mentioned being a big fan of 80s stuff earlier, and I think we're going to have to lean on both of your expertise in that realm for this next album, because we're reviewing the new album from Perturbator, Lustful Sacraments, out now on Blood Music. I don't think anyone would argue that maybe after Carpenter Brute, Perturbator is probably the foremost artist from the synthwave scene that kind of exploded into the metal underground a few years ago. Real name, James Kent. And there's been a lot said around this album, to be honest, a lot of it by Perturbator himself. There's a lot of kind of hype about him kind of leaving the synthwave tag behind, embracing the more goth industrial side of his 80s palette. Do you think this album has exceeded in that sense, Steve? Is there enough here to really pull Perturbator away from the synthwave crowd?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's actually, I mean, I was having, you know, the conversations that I've had with people regarding this are usually kind of focused on that, like, is this a synthwave album? And I think there's enough of it to be kind of, I mean, he's still a synthwave artist, but I don't really feel like this is a synthwave album. I mean, when you think about the best, or the things that are most sort of striking about that scene, certainly something like Carpenter Brute is very danceable.
Yeah, it's part, you know, it's party
Ghost
music.
Ghost is very, yeah, very danceable. And that kind of day glow 80s thing that those bands do. And I think New Model, the last Perturbator EP, was markedly darker and slower and creepier and lent on and greyer. It's a, you know, kind of, it's a, rather than it be that kind of neon pink, electric pink, it's more of a grey. And I think this album is more of a grey as well. What it does do is it means that, I mean, is synthwave really an original sound? I mean, you can't really say it is. I think it felt like quite a unique thing to be happening at the time, because it was a long time since you'd heard anything like this happening. And certainly within the prism of, like, you know, a metal band doing it or something kind of conjoined with extreme metal, it did feel like a weird thing. And it obviously captured the imagination of, I mean, I remember going to see Perturbator at the ULU in London, and there was people with like Napalm Death shirts on and Carcass shirts, and it was all like, you know, it was metal, it was all metalheads. So he's definitely like hit that mark for those people. This is a much, I think this is certainly got more to do with kind of, like I say, something like Cabaret Voltaire than it does like, I don't know, Duran Duran or Miami Vice. You know, it's more Dune and Cabaret Voltaire than Miami Vice and Spandau Ballet, which is what the synthwave thing would have been previously. So I think it's a bit slower, it's a bit darker, it's a bit greyer. It's got some actual vocals on it as well, giving it a kind of goth feel. Very kind of Andrew Eldritch from the Sisters of Mercy sort of feel to it as well. I think if you like all that stuff, you know, if you like your 80s to be the Lost Boys, this maybe is a bit darker than that. And I think what's cool about synthwave is it was like the kind of the absolute kind of retro. It was almost like an idealized version of retro 80s synthwave, wasn't it? It was like everything that was sort of OTT about the 80s turned up even further and brought back and lent on the most sort of ludicrous parts of it. But there actually was a kind of lot of dark grey industrial stuff in the 80s, and I think he's definitely leaning more towards that territory on this record than definitely any of his peers. And I think it's good because it sets him apart from his peers in synthwave, but it maybe isn't particularly unique in the group. I think there's a lot of bands from, you know, I mentioned JJL on this podcast before, I Like Trains album that came out last year. There's a lot of bands doing that kind of 80s post-punk industrially thing, that kind of Killing Joke thing. And I think there's a, you know, that's more where this album is heading towards, I think, which is cool for me because I like that shit.
Yeah, that's, I think that's really lot. Fair. I mean, I really like this album. I think it's really, really good. I've said that a few times today, so it's a lot of good shit around at the moment. It sounds like an obvious thing because so much of where synthwave have come from has come from kind of soundtracks and the kind of John Carpenter-esque productions and things like that. But this really does sound like a proper soundtrack because it's really paced differently, I think, from a lot of synthwave. It's not just chucking bangers at you left, right and center. I think the atmospherics on it are quite unique, and like you said, Steve, the kind of pacing on it is different. It's not afraid to slow things right down into a more this kind of foreboding, imposing slog. There's a track called Dethroned Under a Funeral Haze. It's really kind of slow and brooding and atmospheric that I really like. It just kind of seeps under your skin and feels like a clear shift away tonally from the kind of stuff that underpins someone like Carpenter Brute, I think. I mean, Jonathan, as someone who grew up in the 80s and has lived it, how much do you think this album and this kind of thing, when bands try to go into this realm, really capture the essence of what made that decade so unique and so iconic and just, I guess, so heavily mined for iconography since?
Well, there's two ways to approach this. First of all, the reason why metalheads, especially a lot of old school metalheads, love all this stuff is because if you're an old school metalhead, the chances are you grew up in the 80s, so you grew up all around this. And, you know, even if you're metalhead, and I wasn't actually in the 80s, but it was still, you know, very much part of your DNA. I mean, I could chat to the guys, and particularly Jason and David Macacocca, about a love of Japan and David Sylvian, like Till the Cows Come Home. Now, actually, Perturbator was the first synthwave artist I ever got introduced to. I had someone like raving about him, said this thing's going to be massive, and I was like, I listened to it and I was like, what, seriously? To me, it just at the beginning it sounded like a parody of what the 80s was, especially 80s music. This is just too over bright, and maybe it lacked some of the gloom that was actually part of the 80s and part of what really drew people who were into metal as well into it. So that's probably why, like, a lot of this kind of post-punk and goth has been seeping into metal for the last 3, 4, 5 years anyway, because it's what we grew up with. B, it feels, you know, that kind of itchy sense of angst and isolation feels kind of very appropriate to now. And also, yeah, it's just great music. And I didn't really get to synthwave until I saw Carpenter Brute live, and then it all clicked. And I'm an 80s kid. I just thought it was a bit too much of a parody. It didn't really sound like anything that I grew up with, which had a bit more nuance to it, even though, you know, so it was an idea of 80s for people who didn't grow up in the 80s, I think. But this feels really much like, you know, it's almost like synthwave noir, isn't it? And it's got a very sort of urban feel to it. So it really is this kind of like cityscape. And, you know, it's gone from like John Carpenter. Also, you can hear little bits of Vangelis. And there's some songs where I can hear real parallel with a band like Voices, who are like, again, very, you know, urban based, but a black metal band who also brought in a lot of post-punk and goth influences into, say, into the last couple of albums. And there's little bits that just really parallel it. So that also, like, totally, you know, I can see the bond between the metal scene and this kind of dark wave and post-punk as well. And I actually thought that when I first heard it, I can't imagine anyone dancing to this. I was listening to the game on the headphones, just like, actually, yeah, you can. This is what people used to dance to in goth clubs. You just got to do the goth hands.
Goth hands are just like a really moody jazz hands.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And so I didn't think it was danceable. And then listening to it again today, I think, no, actually, I can totally see a kind of, like, you know, like a last, this is the last party before the apocalypse.
You can't really
say
it better than that, can you? Yeah, it's a cool album, and I think it's it shows that there's kind of legs in the synthwave scene. Like, when it first kind of exploded, it felt like an oddity, and I think it, you know, there was some cracking music in it from the start. I mean, Perturbator's already done some great stuff. I think the Carpenter Brute album a couple of years ago is absolutely blinding as well, so I've got a lot of love for this scene. But I think there's, you know, whether you want to call this synth, I mean, this is still a synthwave artist. It's just a very different shade. And I think this album shows that there's a lot of evolutions, even if it's evolutions still technically looking backwards, that this scene can provide. So I know there's a Carpenter Brut album on the way at some point, or I at least presume there is. So I'll be interested to see.
And a Ghost album.
Yeah, a Ghost album as well. Obviously, we're talking about Synthwave Ghost, not Ghost Ghost. So yeah, there's lots of stuff to come from that scene, and hopefully this will be a signpost for how it can evolve. Perturbator, Lustful Sacrament is out right now via Blood Music. It's all good stuff. And if that's not your vibe, maybe you'll prefer the Fear Factory album. If you don't like that, we've also reviewed Atreyu, Black Moon Mother, Noctul, loads of great and interesting stuff out right now. And that is it for this week's show. So we'll be back next week in download week, if you can actually believe that, for a whole new Metal Hammer podcast. We'll see you then. And don't forget to go and check out our awesome sponsors, Killstar. You can get an exclusive discount by heading over to www.killstar.com/pages/metalpods. We'll see you next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.